We like to do things by the numbers. We're all about commerce and community. Welcome to The Upswing, presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now for the host that's always on The Upswing, Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Monday. Happy Monday, indeed. We're swinging into the new week. We'll get updates on several Milwaukee projects on Milwaukee's east side when 3rd District Alderman Jonathan Brostoff joins us in the second half of the show. And as we do every Monday, we're going to preview the week ahead and touch on the key money issues of the day with the one and only Dave Spanos, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Also, we're going to do a definition segment, just the basics, Markets 101. What do all these terms that we hear each and every day mean? APR, FICO, COGS. We're going to get right to the source, defining the terms that make our money happen each and every day. That will be with Dave coming up next. But first, as we do each and every beginning of the show, let's go two up.
Up one, two.
Now it's time for the
1, 2, 2.
Up on the upswing.
It's back to business for the Milwaukee Bucks and a new Deer District corporate office building. The Bucks, by the way, updating your calendar, tip off their new season exactly 1 month from today in Philadelphia versus the 76ers. But last week, according to the Biz Times, there was some big off-the-court news. Chicago-based North Wells Capital, the same firm that redeveloped the downtown Boston store building, where now Kohl's and Fiserv's new corporate headquarters are, is planning to develop a new office building in the Deer District. The building is planned on a site that is known as Block 6 of the Deer District, according to the Biz Times. This is the parcel that is just north of the still pretty new Trade Hotel. The Bucks, of course, own the land. JS Online had additional reporting on this story saying, our intent for the Deer District has always been to have best-in-class office building. We continuously are exploring this potential, and there have been significant interests as of late. This according to Jessica Murrow, Bucks Vice President of Arena and Hospitality Marketing. As part of the project, Murrow went on to say in a statement, the Bucks would intend to move their business office to the development. They're currently at Schlitz Park. So the developers have been talking with different financial services companies and looking for potential co-anchors for a new building at Deer District. My guess is that several companies are in the mix, and it would be a benefit to the team for sure to be closer to Fiserv Forum, although I do love their offices at Schlitz Park. But the key to any development, any new development in the Deer District, is that it has to connect with all other downtown areas to grow the pie. Next up, more downtown. New leadership for a downtown firm, Grafe, has announced that its top executives at the engineering, planning, and design firm are preparing for the next generation at Grafe. There's a bunch of high-level retirements coming at Grafe, but Pat Gresson will become the Milwaukee-based company president effective January 1st, 2025. He'll assume the role of CEO after current Grafe president and CEO John Kissinger retires after the next 2 years, the company said last week. There was a rigorous selection process narrowed down to a group of internal candidates, and the company's board voted unanimously on Wednesday last week to approve Gresson as Grafe's next president. I've served on the Westtown board with Pat Gresson. He is civic-minded, he is big picture, and he's been involved in a ton of different things around the area, including Bayshore, Discovery World, the Milwaukee Art Museum, and more. This is a great transition for Grafe that's located right out here at the Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Speaking of leaders, what does J.P. Morgan Chase's CEO, Jamie Dimon, think about last week's announced rate cut? Better yet, what does Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano think about Diamond's thoughts? So much thinking happening this Monday. We're going to do it all. Dave Spano, CEO of NX Wealth Management, joins us. Coming up next, this is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Before we get to Dave Spano, we invite you to participate in a WTMJ Fall 2024 survey, a fan survey. It takes less than 10 minutes to complete, and we want your feedback. To participate, simply text the word survey to the WTMJ talk and text line at 855-616-1620. That's 855-616-1620. The survey link will be text back to you. Simple, easy, as a big thank you for your participation. Upon completion of the survey, you're going to be entered to win a package that includes two Bucks tickets to the 2024 season and an overnight stay at the Pfister Hotel right here in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Text survey to 855-616-1620. Dave Spano, CEO of NX Wealth Management. Dave, happy Monday. Thanks for taking the time, as always.
Yeah, happy Monday to you as well. And folks, when you fill out that survey, make sure you say who the best guest is on the Jeff Sherman Show throughout the week.
Without a doubt, indeed. So, some interesting news from J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon over the weekend, suggesting that, you know, this half-point interest rate, Dave, is a minor thing that Wall Street, not Main Street, is obsessing over. How should we, as just everyday Main Streeters, care about the cut? And what should we obsess about? I mean, that's a big question, financially speaking.
I got it. So Jamie Dimon, he talks a lot. He's probably the most notable CEO on Wall Street at J.P. Morgan. He does make a lot of news. There's no question about it. But he says some stuff that doesn't come true. You remember, in mid-2022, he said, get ready for a hurricane in the coming market. But then in October of 2022, the AI-driven bull market began, and through the roof we went. So he is somebody I watch. I definitely watch what he says. And, but the idea that there is it's obsessed by Wall Street is true. There's no question about that. If you look at really what happens, the difference between what happens at the Federal Reserve, which is this, you know, this rate that we talk about, and the Treasury market is really more important because the Treasury market trades way in front of the Fed. They don't need the Fed to make changes. And there's a big gap right now. So the Treasury market's at around 3.5%. And the Federal Reserve rate was at 5.5% on the top end, now down to 5%. So there's a big gap that's going to have to close. And that second rate that I talk about, the Treasury rate, is really more important for everyday Americans because that sets mortgage rates and car loans and so on and so forth. So to that extent, he is correct that the Treasury market does make a whole lot more news than really what the Federal Reserve does. But this is a shift. There's no question about it. You can talk about what the Federal Reserve did really from 08 all the way up to 2022. They kept rates, you know, near zero. And so they spiked them up to 5%. That was a change. And now you're going to have this paradigm shift again as the rates begin to come down, probably over the next 2 years, this will be the story.
What are some of the things that we should obsess about right now and change in our financial strategies? Should we wait for additional rate cuts, or what are those kind of one or two suggestions right now?
Yeah, if you want to obsess, and if this is financial planning 101, put money away in your 401k plan, your retirement plan. Put it away on a tax advantage, sometimes pre-tax basis. Just keep doing that. Just keep grinding, for sure. That's number one. And number two is don't get over your skis with your debt. Mm-hmm. Keep your debt under control. And if you could just tell a recent college grad, what are the two things that you want them to do? Keep your debt under control and save your money. And folks, that'll be the best piece of advice you get.
Okay. As you look to different industries and sectors right now, are there ones that are a little bit more impervious to these current conditions?
Yeah. If you think about if we expect a slowdown, and that's really, is the Fed lowering 50 basis points, because they're fearing a major slowdown. That's a lot of the economic indicators are saying we're going to be slower in those types of areas than classic defensive, like, you know, defensive stocks like utilities, consumer staples, government bonds.
Yeah.
They historically have done well. But if the Fed is cutting rates just because they want to get it back down, you know, try to get a soft landing, then more things like cyclicals, and cyclicals are industrial stocks, financial stocks, materials, they can do well. So, you know, trying to time is really, it's, I always say it's a fool's errand, Jeff, because you have to be right not once, but twice. You know, when you get out and when you get back in. So shifting your portfolio is healthy. Certainly can do that by making sure you go through your portfolio, know what's in it, why it's in it, and how much you're paying for it.
Yeah, and another popular play, people like to think, all right, big dividends are always in utilities, and that, you know, that's going to be the case no matter where rates are.
But utilities have been at the bottom. If you look at the 11 sectors, utilities have been the 11th sector, you know, over the last number of years. So you're right about that, but that's in a defensive play. That's in when the economy is slowing down. People will still pay their utilities and still pay their cell phone bill.
All right. Very good. Well, speaking of markets, let's, when we come back, Dave, if you're up for it, we're going to do a definition deep dive in the next segment. We hear all these terms every day.
Spelling bee.
Think there'll be any spelling, but there'll be a lot of acronyms and abbreviations. And we're just going to go through it all and get your take on what all these terms mean, just so we're all on the same plane. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. Dave, the Dow has to rise, about 20% to get to 50,000. So let's move away from the number a little bit and define some of the terms that we hear about each and every day. Just when we hear the Dow Jones Industrial Average, what is that in company?
Yeah, so it's funny. The Dow has been around for a really long time. And it's, you know, it's 30 stocks. It's 30 very large stocks, publicly traded companies that they put in there. And sometimes they swap them in and out. There's a committee, you know, it's really the publishers of the Wall Street Journal that do that. That's the Dow, you know, the Dow Jones owns the Wall Street Journal. And they swap these companies in and out. And it's been around since the late 1800s. And because it's the oldest and most widely watched, doesn't really make it a good barometer. Right. But it has been around for a long time. So the Dow Jones is very narrow. It's 30 stocks. It's called the Dow. Been around a long time, but not a great indicator.
Okay. And the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ Composite, we hear both those. Is that the same thing?
Well, the NASDAQ obviously is the is a traded, you know, it's a series of stocks that gets traded. There's 3,400 companies on the NASDAQ stock exchange. There's, you know, obviously we talk about the New York Stock Exchange. There is the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. And those, there's 3,400 companies in there, very heavily weighted towards tech companies. So it's a key indicator for the health of the tech sector and their performance. So you look at Dow Jones, that's the New York Stock Exchange for the most part. The NASDAQ is the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. By the way, just a fun fact, if you look at how many ticker symbols are in, you can tell what exchange it's on. So generally, if it's three or less, that's on the Dow Jones, and four or more, just a fun indicator that's on the NASDAQ.
Okay. And the S&P 500 and the Russell 2000 then?
Right. So the S&P is the Standard & Poor's, and so it's the Standard & Poor's largest 500 companies. And the one thing about the Standard & Poor's is that, unlike the Dow Jones, it's market cap weighted. What does that mean? Market capitalization of a company is the size of the company. And the reason why I bring that up is, for example, if you go back to the Dow, for example, if Boeing is trading just theoretically at $300 a share and Apple, now this is not true, but if Apple was at 30, that does not indicate, you know, it's price weighted. The S&P 500 is market cap weighted. And the reason why that's important is the Mag 7, the Magnificent 7, the big tech stocks, represent about a third, somewhere in that neighborhood, of the market value, the market cap weighted. So that when those big companies move, they can move the S&P 500 significantly. But most investment firms you generally use the S&P 500 as their large cap indicator. Okay. And the Russell 2000 is just small cap companies. So those four really can indicate for domestic stocks. Those four indicators will tell you what's really good for United States-based companies. But obviously, there are bonds, there's international stocks, there's mm-hmm. other indicators that should go into a more broad-based index.
Would you ever foresee the creation of a new index? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that, you know, just in a specific state or...
Yeah, there are state indicators, but, you know, if you think about, you know, an index, like an index finger, it's pointing to something, and it's better that's the index finger than the other finger pointing to something. But you want to make sure that there is a strategy. But there's a lot of talk about crypto. You saw the vice president going out and talking to the crypto folks this weekend, raising a gazillion dollars this weekend from the crypto folks. And, of course, you know, J.D. Vance and Trump certainly have been kowtowing to some of the crypto folks. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see some type of crypto indicator down the road. But, you know, there are indices that are popped up. You know, in fact, we had a benchmarking conversation this past week to talk about what is the right indicator, because if it's 60-40 or 70-30, how do you really measure that? Because you can't just compare your performance in your account to the S&P 500 if only 60% of your company, of your investments, are in stocks.
Mm-hmm.
People have international stocks, they have bonds, and what's the better indicator?
So just briefly then, PCE, what are we going to hear from the BEA this week?
A lot of stuff. FUBAR is what you're going to hear. But PCE is the personal consumption indicator. Why do we look at that? It's really what the Fed bases their decisions on. It's really a good indicator for them versus the old CPI. And so you just look at PCE indicator. The Fed looks at that. You know, I don't know if everyday America wants to look at that, but it's what the Fed pays attention to. And just from 30,000 feet, we saw 50 basis points as expected on Wednesday. You'll see another at least 25 basis points after the election and another 25 basis points in December. So 100
Thank you,
basis
Dave.
Points.
Swing, swing from the table. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happy Monday. All right. There's a new playground maybe coming, a new theater on the river, a new boat docks, an expanded terrace. All could replace what was used to be known as the Swing Park underneath the Holden Street Bridge over the Milwaukee River, the 700 block of North Water Street on Milwaukee's east side. This is all under a revised proposal from the Department of Public Works that was just released about a week and a half ago or so. The Swing Park closed in 2023 as a multi-year reconstruction project on the bridge above it began. So we're in this reimagining phase for this really cool parcel of land that connects downtown to Brady Street to the east side. And Alderman Jonathan Brostoff joins us to tell us all about it and much, much more. Jonathan, thanks for taking time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an exciting time right now. And as you said, we have a lot of construction work being done, so it's shut down anyway. We had a lot of challenges over there, so we're looking to look at what's possible and take something that was kind of a challenge for certain parts of the area and make into a huge asset and a destination.
Yeah. So give us the quick history of the park. It's now kind of being referred to as the Landing at Tannery Road to kind of be adjacent to the development that's coming around it. What's the history of the park, and what role do you see it kind of being, I don't know, part of a broader development to revitalize that whole area?
Yeah, well, technically it's in the Tannery Row neighborhood. It's not exact. It's Brady Street adjacent, but it's technically Tannery Row. So that's where the name came from. And they want a lot of the neighbors, you know, want to see something that's family friendly, that's much more encouraging and well kept for the neighborhood to, again, use as an asset. And previously, there was kind of this guerrilla-style project, and UWM was involved, or a student from UWM or an architect, professor, and they, kind of put it up, and it was great. But unfortunately, it became technically a city park after that, but it wasn't well maintained. And after years and years of degradation, it, unfortunately kept diminishing. And then after that, while it wasn't being kept up, there was some negative elements in the area, including some, situations around violence and a lot of property damage and things of that nature. And it kind of got to a boiling point in the neighborhood. And so there's been a lot of conversations. But again, we want to take something that did provide some challenges to the area and transform it into a huge asset, a big positive. And especially since you've got so many schools in the area, you've got Cass Street School in Tamarack, you've got young families in the area, and you have a lot of folks that want to see something beautiful happen there.
Yeah. I mean, it's placemaking 101. You're looking to reimagine a space and make it a place and destination for everyone.
Exactly.
So in terms of the budget and the cost for this project, is there something earmarked on the city side?
No. Well, there's been some money put in the last budget for planning for it, but it's very early in the process right now. So again, we have some time because it has to be completely, shut down because of the structural work that's being done on the bridge. You know, it's just basic maintenance to make sure it's safe and cars aren't going to, be falling off or nothing like that. So once that's done, we'll have a little bit of time. But we did create the first ever Friends of Group for a city park. Hmm. Now, normally the Friends of have all been county parks because the Milwaukee County park system has almost all the parks in Milwaukee.
Right.
But there are a couple, there are some that are in the city. And so we partnered with the Friends Group. They agreed to try it out as a test case for the first city one. So there is a mechanism in place for neighbors and stakeholders and others that want to donate to it, which is great. And we also, I think we'll have some other local stakeholders who want to see something good happen there. But right now we're really early in on the phase, and there's an opportunity for neighbors or anyone who wants to weigh in on it to give their ideas, to say elements of design that they'd like. And once we get all that information, have some more community meetings. We just had our first. We'll get those design elements, start thinking about, pricing, materials, that sort of stuff, and we can work our way from there. But because it's so early on in the phase, we don't have costs associated yet.
Okay. Milwaukee Alderman Jonathan Brostoff joins us. When we come back, changes are happening on East North Avenue. Construction in earnest began about a week and a half ago. We'll get an update on that big project and much, much more. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ.
Time for a quick look at your coffee and how much it costs. It's The Upswing's Coffee Index.
Welcome back to the Upswing Coffee Index. It's Monday. Maybe you need a second cup to get you through your day. I had a 7:30 meeting this morning, not in Alderman Brostoff's district. I went south side to Wantable Cafe, 7:30 meeting. I got a 16-ounce coffee, half regular, half decaf, did a little bit of cream, $3.80. So a little bit more than I usually spend, Producer Jaslyn. How about you? You were in the same area. We didn't cross paths.
Yeah, I took the bus up to the Third Ward, and I went to the Valentine Coffee, because I don't go to Third Ward very often. So that was only $2.71, although I put the remainder of my change in the tip jar. So
okay, that's good. That's good. Pay it forward for the greater good, for sure. Where's your morning coffee? You have like four young kids, right?
I got four. Right. I got a 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 4-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And I don't actually drink any caffeine, but we are getting a Valentine on Downer and Kenwood.
Yes.
So that's exciting. And if I did drink coffee, it'd be at Sweet Joy Cafe on Brady Street. It's an amazing Brazilian spot. Highly recommend it. They have great food, great little desserts, great coffee, I'm sure. Check it out.
All right, very good. I'll add it to my swing through for sure for the week. So big changes are coming to East North Avenue as you head through into the beautiful east side of Milwaukee. Construction began, it's been going on for a while, but kind of began in earnest about a week and a half ago. Traffic controls include one-way westbound traffic on East North Avenue between Humboldt and North Murray, and then two-way traffic on East North Avenue between North Farwell and North Prospects at Prospect Avenues. So tell us a little bit more about the improvements, because often people just see, oh, these are just barrels, like this is a headache. But tell us what you're doing to improve safety on the east side of Milwaukee.
Yeah, absolutely. That corridor on East North Avenue historically has been one of the top 10 statistically most dangerous corridors in the city. And as we all know, public safety and reckless driving is a huge challenge. And we want to basically use the built environment to create streets that are going to be safer, more family friendly, easier for people with mobility challenges, better for drivers, pedestrians, bicyclists, and folks that are on scooters, other modes of transportation. So that's exactly what we're doing to that part of North Avenue. We are installing a proper protected bike lane. We're going to have little bus shelters that are going to be a lot easier to get on and get off, and make it easier for folks to use our wonderful public transit system. And overall, we've already seen some improvements. For example, right by Maryland Avenue Montessori, as you're turning north onto Maryland, you see, it's right at the entrance of the school, the hospital, and the elderly home. We made a little kind of pedestrian island there to reduce the tension there. Mm-hmm. And it's been a huge improvement already. This is the, what we're seeing now is the end of phase one for East North Avenue, and next year we'll start phase two. But yeah, it's safer streets for everyone. Yeah. So pretty exciting.
So what's the cost and timeline for this project?
I am not sure this phase of it has gone up and down. I'm not sure the most recent numbers, because unfortunately, concrete has gone through the roof. Labor's still up, and it's still, a tough market. Yeah. All things considered, hopefully that'll work out soon. But the overall budget is about $3.8 million. That's for the whole of East North Avenue.
Okay.
But this first phase is, I think it's around $1.3 million, but I might be a little bit off on that. Just again, the numbers have kind of gone up and down quite a bit since we initially started this. So yeah, it's a hefty project, yeah. But we're using the money as best as we can to get the safest streets possible.
And completion for this phase will be done by the time snow falls?
Yeah, this should be done by November.
Okay.
We have a pretty aggressive timeline. Normally, a project like this, as I understand it, would take 6 months, but we were able to work with the contractors, work with our department, and get it down to about 2 months. And so it depends on weather and some other factors, but we're looking to get this completed before the end of the year.
Milwaukee Alderman Jonathan Brostoff joins us. When we come back, I want to know about the improvements of bike lanes on the east side. We'll talk about the collaboration between all the elements of the east side, including UWM. And is it okay? Is it legal for me to run in a bike lane? Burning questions. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle.
Welcome back to The Upswing. Milwaukee Alderman, east side of Milwaukee, Jonathan Brostoff joins us. Jonathan, as you look at your district, what other transportation and infrastructure improvements do you believe are needed to support the businesses? I mean, the East Side is such a creative mix of not only people but businesses. What do you want to see?
Ultimately, the best thing I think can happen to us is if we could get the hop extended going all the way down to the university and then through other parts of the city as well. But for my district, that's what I'd like to see. And we've already seen it extended to the Couture, which has been a great success. But basically, we want to make more multimodal transit options available, and we see young people are buying less cars these days. One of the major factors for young couples moving to new cities is if they have to have a car, if they can get around other ways, or walkability, things of that nature. So, yeah, I think we want to make streets that are designed for people, not just getting cars to and from places as quick as possible.
Yeah. Well, speaking of streets designed for people, obviously the city in all areas of the city is adding more and more bike lanes. Mm-hmm. And it's been a little hard to change mindsets around bike lanes just because people aren't 100% used to them, especially in districts like yours that are really, really dense. Mm-hmm. How have the addition to bike lanes improved the walkability and just the density of the east side?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, the mayor has a vision for, I think it's 50 miles of contiguous bike lanes, and I'm all for it. I think we want to make a city that, again, is for all modes of transportation, and we have an amazing bike path system here, you know, with the Hank Aaron, you know, the Oak Leaf, et cetera. We have some really great, you know, culture of bike advocacy and folks involved with that sort of stuff. And it's also just promoting a healthier lifestyle while combating reckless driving. So overall, there's been some transition and some growing pains with it, but overall it's been very well received. And a lot of, especially some of the younger families and more biker-focused residents are thrilled with it.
Okay. For passionate runners like me, through your lens, is it legal for me to run in a bike lane?
Depends. Mostly no.
Okay.
It depends if there are other options available. But
other options,
no.
Meaning a sidewalk. If there's a sidewalk, I can't run in the bike lane. That's
right.
Basically the law.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. All right. Note to self, Jeff, as you run. If there's a sidewalk, stay on the sidewalk. Sometimes the sidewalks can have little bumps in them. So I appreciate the ease of the bike lane.
Hey.
But all right. What about your additional plans to leverage the East Side's proximity to UWM? What do you see as economic drivers there in placemaking?
Well, unfortunately, UWM's taken a huge hit lately. There's 7,000 to 8,000 less students going there than when I was there, and there's also a lot of other challenges that they're having right now. But ultimately, it is a great institution, and it provides a lot of wonderful opportunities. Again, I think more connectivity through things like the HOP would be really helpful. But we also want to continuously reach out. And one of the things that we're constantly trying to do is get the meal plan expanded to other restaurants. I think Ian's Pizza, they used to have beans and barley, etc. So we want more of the residents and the students kind of intermixing, and more of the students getting outside of just the immediate campus area and going to other parts of the city as well. It's a great institution, but they've just come on hard times, I think, especially since COVID. So we want to support them.
Milwaukee Alderman Jonathan Brostoff. Jonathan, thanks for taking time with us this Monday morning.
Thanks.
Enjoy
for
the rest
me.
Of the week.
Absolutely.
These are your business headlines from the Milwaukee Business Journal.
A proposed development could bring a Culver's to Kenosha soon. The proposal would transform vacant city land into four new businesses, including a Culver's. However, no other formal plans have been made. Construction on Summerfest townhomes could begin this fall. Peter Renner of Renner Architects LLC applied for permits to build 13 townhome-style condos at 610 East Summerfest Place. Building could be completed by summer 2025. Fairbanks Morris to buy Naval Propulsors business. The Beloit Defense supplier has entered into an agreement to acquire the Naval Propulsors and Handling business of London-based Rolls-Royce PLC. Financial terms of the deal are not being disclosed. I'm Logan Hansen with MilwaukeeBusinessJournal.com on News Radio WTMJ.